So we're with Henry Diltz, who's photographed many, many rock stars, famous photographer, and now working with Fender to commemorate the Fender 30th anniversary of their custom shop. So, Henry, you ended up being a photographer. It wasn't planned, though.
I just picked up a camera one day in Laurel Canyon or on the road and lived in Laurel Canyon, photographed all my friends up there who were fellow musicians, and then they all started becoming famous, you know. Mama Cass and David Crosby, Stephen Stills, Neil Young. And, it was a lucky break for me.
You have you've done so many albums, hundreds of albums, the covers.
I think, yes.
You have a ton of great stories, like with the Morrison Hotel. I brought that album in. Can you tell us the story of that one? Because it was hard to take that photo that day, but you got it done.
Yes. I worked with a graphic artist named Gary Burden. Mm-hmm. Who was a designer, and the two of us would be a team doing these album covers. And so for that, we got a call from the Doors, and they said, we want you to do our album. So we went to meet with them, and we said, do you have a title? They said, no. Mm-hmm. They said, do you have any ideas what you want on your cover? No. And we're thinking, well, we're scratching our heads. And Ray Manzarek, the keyboard player, just at random kind of spoke up, said, my wife Dorothy and I were driving through downtown L.A. the other day. We saw this funky old hotel, Morrison Hotel. Gary and I both went, whoa, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. We went right down there in their Volkswagen van and looked at it, and it looked perfect. The letters on the window and an arc. And so we went down a week later with the band, and we walked in the lobby. Now, it was it says on the sign, rooms $250 and up. That's not $250. It's $2.50.
Right.
So it was, you might call it a flea bag. For transients, guys to go sleep it off. And so we went in the lobby, and there was a guy behind the desk, a young guy. I said, well, we're just going to be over there taking a few pictures. He said, no, you can't. I'm going, why not? Nobody's even in here. Oh, the manager, you've got to speak to the owner. And he wasn't there. So I said, come on, you guys, we got to go outside. And I was going to have him stand in front of the window. Uh-huh. And as we were standing there, I saw a light go on through the window, and I looked in, and it was the elevator light, and the guy from the desk had gone up in the elevator. So I just said, run in there, quick, run in there. And they jumped behind the window. We took one roll of film and just got out of there. Took 5 minutes. And then the funny thing is, then Jim said, well, let's go get a drink. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So we got in the Volkswagen van, drove a few blocks to Skid Row, where it was all bars and pawn shops, and we didn't know where to stop until someone saw on the next corner Hard Rock Cafe. Well, no one had ever heard of that before, but it sounded like that's where we needed to go to have a beer. So we did, took pictures outside, which went on the back of the Morrison Hotel album. Mm-hmm. And as soon as that album came out, they got a call from London, and a voice on the phone said, would you mind if we use that name? We're starting a cafe here in London. And they said, yeah, go ahead. And that was the beginning of the Hard Rock Cafe empire.
That's
amazing. All in one day.
An incredible story. So you guys were drinking on the bad side of town. Hard Rock Cafe got its start, and the guy took the elevator at the wrong time so you could get
exactly
that photo.
Right. And then years later, I opened up a little gallery with a couple of friends just to show my photos. And we actually traveled around the country doing weekend shows, one a month. We'd go to a different city. We ended up in New York, and we kind of got a semi-permanent place in Soho. But we had no name. Really. Mm-hmm. It just said the photography of Henry Diltz in small letters. And one day I was across the street and looking at our window with my partner, Peter Blatchley. And in the window was that Morrison Hotel print. Mm-hmm. And with that beautiful lettering. But on our window, there was nothing.
Right.
It was blank. And I said, look at how nice it looks on the picture. And look how our window's got nothing. Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, wow, let's get a... I'll call a painter. The next day, they painted Morrison Hotel on our window, sort of just to go with the picture.
Yeah.
And then that became the name of our gallery. So to this day, we've got three of them, and they're called Morrison Hotel Gallery.
That's right. You have one here. Is it on Sunset?
It's at the Sunset Marquee.
Yeah.
And one in New York in Soho. And we just opened one in Maui. at Mick Fleetwood's restaurant.
Yeah, so this is something to see. You should definitely see it. And right now, there's a celebration on Sunset Strip. West Hollywood is doing this. They're putting together different types of events, and including one of yours, where you can go and visit at the library a lot of your work.
Right, the West Hollywood Library, just south of Santa Monica Boulevard. They have a big display of a bunch of my photos on the wall. It's so nice because I love libraries. And you know, Gary and I, when we did all these album covers, we always would plan an adventure so that something would happen. Partly it was to get the guys away from their managers and their girlfriends and their phones because, you know, we didn't have cell phones or anything then. We didn't even have beepers in those days. So, and so we'd go somewhere. We took the Eagles out to the desert and spent the night out there and took pictures. And my partner Gary would say, Henry, just photograph everything that happens. Film's the cheapest part. And so, but I did that anyway, you know, just documenting everything that happened. And we took the group America up to Big Sur for an album cover. Once we went to an Indian reservation. And whenever we would photograph a group, we'd go somewhere and have a little adventure. So therefore, there are stories to go with all of these album covers rather than if I'd have just done it in the studio, what would you say? Well, they came over at 2 o'clock. They stood there. We went, you know.
Yeah.
Flash, and then they went home. You
know? Yeah, that's true. Every one of your sessions was like an adventure because you were you were out in the desert with America. You guys rode horses into the desert.
We did, of course, with no name. We rode through the desert. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's all I knew. I don't know how to use lights and studio stuff and all because I never went to photo school. I just, you know.
It's boring to do it that way. You're right. So, but don't hold it against me when I take my picture of you with my phone, if that's okay, before you go.
Yeah, that's okay.
But so, I mean, you have so many great stories and you're like the perfect artist to work with Fender, which also has a rich history and a whole lot of stories to go along with it. Fender's like its own institution. You know, so many things have happened with it and through it over the years.
Absolutely. It's part of music history. I mean, the history of Fender is inexorably linked to the musical history that we're talking about here with Henry. So it's exactly a parallel path between the two. Yeah. So, I mean, the Fender came along right at the right time when Buddy Holly was looking for something different and the kids wanted to make a different type of music. And it has luckily been able to be a type of instrument that has just persevered and remained relevant. And so it goes literally from Buddy Holly on the Ed Sullivan Show to Kurt Cobain and Smells Like Teen Spirit through to, you know, any number of bands at festivals today. So
yeah, Fender is part of rock history, music history, period, and continues to be a part of history as we evolve.
If you ask someone today to draw an electric guitar, they'll draw a Fender Stratocaster or a Telecaster. Mm-hmm. But at the time in 1951, when the Telecaster came out, it was called an abomination. It was, you know, people decried it as something, you know, that was just blasphemous, really. Mm-hmm. Because it was a more utilitarian style tool that was built in a modular fashion like Henry Ford and screwed together, you know, where previously guitars were all carved tops and luthiery and built much more in like a violin type style. So, and these guitars were bulletproof and they were built to be played loud. And that just lent to the whole rock and roll revolution. So the marriage of these tools with where people wanted to go and, you know, this creative spark that happened was just a zeitgeisty kind of intersection.
Yeah. Zeitgeist. You grabbed that word. I like that. That's not an easy word to get into a sentence, but you did it. So, and really, the guitars, they do each take a journey with every person, every artist who picks it up.
And there are people who play multiple guitars and you see a band and they switch guitars every song. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's because that's the song they recorded it on and they feel connected to it. But there's some guys that play one guitar and they've kept one guitar and that's the only guitar they play. And it's because, it's not even because it's maybe the best guitar of the ones they own, but it's the one that speaks to them. And those guitars become the storied guitars, you know, where Jeff Beck plays this white Stratocaster almost exclusively all the time. You know, Eric Clapton had that guitar named Blackie through the whole 70s. That's the one that eventually sold at an auction, I think, for $950,000+. And I mean, it's the, you know, it's a slow hand album cover. It's all of that. So these things are, they're symbols, they're, you know, they're instruments, but they're a lot more than that. They're kind of icons because they've become more than just the tool that you make music on. You
know? Right.
And
exactly.
The expressiveness that people can use. A guitar is just so expressive.
Mm-hmm.
So from David Gilmour and Pink Floyd to Eric Clapton to Andy Summers with the Police, it's just super. Everybody does their own thing with a guitar in their hands and is able to let their voice and their personality come through. And that's what we really love about what we make.
So again, Fender, it's the 30th anniversary of the custom shop in Corona, and it comes with this great documentary. And what else do you want us to remember about the custom shop and about this anniversary?
Fender is a company that just is completely inexorably linked to music, and that the custom shop is the place where we look to advance the guitar making art form and pay homage to not only the past and the present, but also push it forward into the future. And it's a beautiful thing to memorialize that this thing that we didn't know was going to exist even for a year when we started it, and would it be a thing that would work or go, has now become this institution within the music industry, and this thing that's patronized by the Keith Richards, Bruce Springsteens, etc., the icons and luminaries of the industry. And we're just super happy that we've made it 30 years. We're looking forward to 30 more, and having people like Henry be able to be a part of that, and the old master builders being able to come back and celebrate what they have given us and what they lent to the kind of fabric and that we've put out for the last 30 years. We're just really excited.
And thank you, Henry Diltz, for bringing your talent, all your skills, and partnering with Fender on this and doing this. And you've got
it. Yes. Mm-hmm. It came kind of late in life, you know, partnering with them. But now I have a new appreciation for Fender guitars. I mean, I've always seen, I mean, everyone I photograph on stage is holding a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never really focusing on that. But mm-hmm. now I will be able to, you know,
yeah,
I have more knowledge of what they're holding and what it means and how they're made and who made them. And so it's great for me.
Thank you for coming, you guys, and go
certainly.
See the Morrison Hotel Gallery. Check that out, because, you know, you'll see some great, great work there. And then the custom shop is in Corona. Of course, you can find it online. People can find it all over the world, the Fender Custom Shop. It's been incredible to hear your stories and have you here.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.